Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
If you love quarterbacks from Akron and wide receivers from Slippery Rock and guards from Mars Hill and a DB from a place called Minot State, we got the show for you. Emory Hunt, author of the biggest draft guide I think anybody makes, 1,000 individual scouting reports in Emory's draft guide every single year. We always love bringing them on. Because I think at this point everybody's sick of talking about the top 10 and they want to hear about not just the sleepers or the deep sleepers. I'm talking like the deepest of deep cuts. Emory Hunt, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. I appreciate that. And, you know, you talk about a draft guide. It's wild to think about. I put out a guide digitally since 2020, right, when we all had to sit our ass down for COVID. And if you bought all five guys now, since then, you sitting on over 4,300 individual scout reports. That's just kind of crazy to think about.
It's not kind of crazy. It's super crazy. We had a good time with you on last year. We did a shadow sleeper concept where we were talking about one guy up high and maybe a guy you could get down low. And this year, we just stripped it down. We just went to straight sleepers. No shadows whatsoever. Just pick guys who are down the board again because we're going to take advantage of what you do. And that's depth, right? To go that deep, that many schools, see players that a lot of people are not even going to look at, including us. I've only seen, I think, two guys on your list. And that's why I love it, because it just helps expand our knowledge and hopefully everybody watching the pod's knowledge of folks that, again, one of the things that we've learned doing this is the line between players that quote unquote make it and the line between players that don't is extremely thin. Has a lot to do with landing spot, has a lot to do with luck, injury, and otherwise. And all these players can play. So it's really cool to talk about guys and what you see in them and who they remind you of and where they might fit. So that's why we love having you on. And that's why this episode is going to be great.
First up here, quarterback. Talks through DJ Irons from the Akron Zip, 6'4", 215, big body. What do you like about him?
That he's vastly underrated. It was funny because watching, you know, the Tennessee game, they're getting blown out. And, you know, this guy comes in, you're like, well, man, he's kind of making these really good throws. Like, wow, this is a fantastic throw. Like, man, he's constantly putting the ball outside the numbers, throwing with touch, throwing with anticipation. It's like he's actually pretty doggone good. You go back and watch the game last year, Ohio State game, same thing where they're getting blown out. It's like he's in the game, and it's like, man, is this dude actually really good? And then you consistently watched him, you're like, oh, he's nice. You know, the problem now was the fact that Akron, you know, they just didn't have a good season, but they had good quarterback play. They ran a two quarterback system. Jeff Undercuffler was the other quarterback who played a lot at UAlbany. He was also rotating in with DJ Irons. And Irons is someone, you know, if you like a big, tall, physical quarterback, he's a guy, but also can make every throw on the field. He didn't participate in the All-Star game cycle this offseason because he was injured. So that's unfortunately why we didn't see him in a postseason All-Star game. But he's definitely got the goods. Again, anything that you want your quarterback to do, he can do it. He operates well from the spread in terms of like being able to see the entire field, make the right throw, move the offense down the field, and he has that underrated athleticism to where if he has a lane, he's not going to take off and slide. He can literally take off and pick up a 40-yard, 50-yard chunk if you let him run down the field.
Is there a particular situation that you see where he could come in as like a QB3 and develop and grow and maybe turn into something more. But if you were his agent, where would you be hoping that he goes?
Pittsburgh, Seattle. I think those are two excellent spots. And you could see it. Pittsburgh was thinking the right way prior to, what they did this offseason. You know, I want to say when they drafted Pickett, the same draft, they took the guy Oladokun, who was phenomenal. Chris Oladokun out of South Dakota State. I had a higher grade on him than Pickett. So I was like, oh, okay, this could be a Gus Frerotte, you know, Heath Shula situation. Because if this dude gets on the field in the preseason, game over. You know, because he has all the passing attributes, but also on top of that has the athleticism and a pedigree of being a winner. But now he's a two-time Super Bowl champion with the Kansas City Chiefs. So it kind of works out for Kansas City, you know, albeit he's the QB3, but you can't take two-time Super Bowl champ away from him. But I think that would be a good spot. He kind of reminds me, you know, a little bit of Drew Lock in terms of how athletic he is, how he can throw the football all over the yard. I wish we would have got to see him in the All-Star game because more people would have been talking about him. He's 6'5", about 215, requisite size that people like, but the athleticism to go with it. But I do feel like Pittsburgh and also Pittsburgh and Seattle would be the best spots for him.
Well, you got me all warm and fuzzy talking about Chris Oladokun because I had him way up in my quarterback rankings, not as high as you did, but loved his game, loved his skill set, and again, was looking for him to get to a place where he had an opportunity. Hoped he would get it earlier, but, you know, like you said, it worked out for him with the Chiefs. You mentioned Undercuffler, the other quarterback, played at Albany. Was he versus teammate there?
He probably was. And, you know, yeah. Albany has quietly become this feeder system because – you have the, you have Verse going down to Florida State. Mm-hmm. Undercoupler goes up to Akron. Anton Kunjaj is the guy that was playing opposite of A.J. Simon, the pass rusher who was at the Hula Bowl. Kunjaj is now transferred up to a FBS program. And he was a terror coming off the end. And the quarterback this year, Reese Poffenberger, transferred, I think, to Miami. So, UAlbany, as Greg Gattuso has done a fantastic job of not only acquiring talent, but developing talent. But the unfortunate part of college football now is that everybody's leaving, you know, the program that gave you the opportunity, took you in, nursed you, developed you, and now you're bouncing out of the program. But, man, talk about a lot of guys coming out of UAlbany.
And, I mean, it sounds like they could make the law firm, Undercuffler and Poffenberger. I mean, you're all set.
You had a running back on here, Marcus Knight from Tennessee Tech. Is that the same Marcus Knight that was at Montana?
That is the same Marcus Knight that was in Montana, which was shocking to me because I'm like, I heard this name. I remember he used to be, they had this nice back at Montana. That was him. And then he played lacrosse there at Montana, which also blew my mind. So you knew he had the athleticism. And then he transfers to Tennessee Tech, who ran like this this tri-back system. But every time he got in the game, he was just kind of dominant. And it showed that he had the, you know, explosiveness, the athleticism, the footwork, the vision. It was like, man, just keep giving him the ball. You kind of want to see him continue to run. But they just rotating backs in there. You know, obviously how it goes, like 2-1-2. You know, you get two series, you get one, you get two series, you know, like that. But he was just remarkable. It reminds me a lot of Tim Hightower. And how he runs. He's a good 6-foot, 222-pounder, good quickness, good athleticism, obviously. And I'm fascinated to see where he ends up.
It's funny in those three-back systems when a team is really dedicated to running three running backs, there's always one guy that you want to see more of, and it's not usually the guy the program gives the most carries to. So they come in with this sort of enigma status. It's like, well, every time he got the ball, he's averaging, you know, 6.1 yards a carry, but they only gave him 100 carries. What are we doing here? That guy ends up going to the pros again. If he ends up in a system where he gets the opportunity, running backs get hurt a lot in the NFL, and suddenly you get the, you know, the Dearness Johnsons of the world to come in. It's like, well, guess what? He can still play.
I would probably say Denver would be a good spot. I'd like to see him go. We know Sean Payton will play the best guy, you know, in terms of he doesn't care if you are a first-round pick or an undrafted free agent. He did that in New Orleans, and you saw that last year in Denver. You saw Jaleel McLaughlin get the rock as a guy that was an undersized running back out of Notre Dame College. Then went to Youngstown State, did great things there, and he's out there starting, playing significant minutes for the Broncos. So if Knight ends up in Denver, he's going to see some time because He's that type of player.
A couple of years ago, there was a receiver out of Slippery Rock that, bounced around a couple camps here and there. Didn't quite make it. There's another receiver coming out of Slippery Rock this year who is a whole different species. 6'4", 220, reportedly ran low 4.4s at the pro day. Kyle Sheets out of Slippery Rock. How does somebody that talented not get poached? Because, I mean, that's a different kind of athlete for that level of football.
Right. Like, what are you doing, West Virginia? You're like right there, right? Yeah. You're right down the road across state lines, you know what I'm saying? And so, or even Pitt, like you're literally next door. So it's fascinating because that's another one of these programs, sight unseen. If you told me this player played X position at Slippery Rock, I'm all in. I don't even have to see him play or know the position. I know he's going to be a good football player because they consistently turn out good players out there in Western PA. And Sheets, to me, was remarkable to watch because he was somebody I talked about in 2022. And so looking forward to him this year. I know he went through a lot of, so it was banged up early in the season. And after I was calling the game and afterwards I was able to check in on a Slippery Rock game in a live viewing, and this was his first game back. So it was like maybe like week 5 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
First time they touch the ball, they go deep. He's running past the defensive back for like a 60-yard touchdown. I was like, this dude is phenomenal, man. And then he gets down to the College Gridiron Showcase, and it's the same thing. You're looking at him working versus FBS / FCS corner, so that's always the matchup you want to see. You're watching him get off the line of scrimmage with ease, stack the defensive back, track the ball, create even more separation, and just consistently work well going deep down the field. Also, working over the middle, working through contact, and doing a good job of playing post up football and boxing out the defensive back. Like, this dude could win short, intermediate, deep down the field. I'm glad he ran what he ran, so folks will take him a little bit more seriously. Because what he ran matches up on the film, and that's why I was so excited about him. Because, again, this is someone, if you're thinking like, and this would be the perfect pick for someone like a Sean McVay, who has taken like the Ben Skowronek, and mm-hmm. kind of transformed him into a flex tight end. Mm-hmm. He's taken the Puka Nacua, who played well outside at BYU, kind of turned him into, an inside receiver where he's kind of playing both slot and that detached, that nasty split X, right? So someone like Sheets can do exactly that. And teams like the Rams, teams like the Ravens, they find a way to nail the back end of the draft, undrafted free agents, and Sheets is someone, if he ends up in Los Angeles, because they are masters at finding the small school prospects and doing more with less, he could end up being a stud.
I'm glad you got there first, because I was going to ask you, with all those skills, with all that talent, 220 that fast, do you see him more as a, a true X? Do you see him as a number two? Do you see him as slot? And you already answered that it, again, he's got enough skills to play in all those positions. But if he finds somebody that can really focus in on kind of mortgaging that power slot role, that you think he could fit right in and excel quickly. So that's fascinating. And it is interesting. Certain teams have a knack at doing this. And the other one with wide receivers that always seems to line up with my late round evaluations is the Seahawks. Like, all my favorite late round UDFA receivers always end up with the Seahawks. And so apparently John and I just see it the same way, because every year there's like four of them on the Seahawks. And I'm like, why doesn't anybody else get these guys? But, Sheets a fascinating prospect because, again, that big, that fast, had a little bit of a gap in the middle with an injury, and now coming out has some buzz because he was in the All-Star game circuit, like you said, ran a really fast time, and that, later in the draft, that's what people are looking for, height, weight, and speed. He's already checked off those boxes, so it'll be fascinating to see where he ends up.
You have an offensive lineman on here, Leandre Andreas, who – he won the Jacobs blocking trophy for the best offensive lineman in the sack. He's from Mars Hill. First of all, is he a tackle or is he a guard to you? Second of all, how high do you think he's going to go? Because if there's one thing that EJ and I have come to understand, it doesn't necessarily matter what grade you have on the top tackles. They're all going quickly, and I have to assume that's going to extend to the quote-unquote depth guys too. So if you have a very talented depth player here, even out of a program like Mars Hill that hasn't put a bunch of talent in the league before, the league is thirsty for offensive linemen. So how high do you think he can go, and what position do you think he's going to play?
Firstly, I got to give a shout-out to my guy Lawrence Jackson Jr. at NBC Sports for playing at Mars Hill. So we finally get, we got Mars Hill in the broadcast. So
there we go.
But he's this was a unique story because the Jacobs Blocking Award goes to the top offensive lineman, I think, in the state of South Carolina. So there's obviously FBS, FCS, D2. So he won it for the D2, which is insane, right? And going to the FCS Bowl in December was the first one out the gate in the States. That's like the second week of December down in Daytona Beach. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he stood out, because as I'm watching one-on-ones, he's wearing 98. I'm like, is there a defensive lineman converting? Like, in there, like, why is this dude wearing 98? So now I'm searching, like, who the hell 98 is, and the roster was a little cut off. I'm like, so now I'm fixated on 98, right? Because I'm like, I got to figure out, I got to really watch this guy.
Give me the mystery.
Right, because now I'm looking at the helmet, like, I'm trying to, I left my binoculars in the room. I'm like, oh. So I'm watching, I'm like, yo, this dude is rock solid. Like, everyone's trying all kind of moves. He tried power, nope. Tried swim, nope. Tried bull rush, nope. And he's just like stonewalling everybody. Like, man, this dude is like, for a defensive lineman, he's pretty good. Like, still focused on the 98, right? But like, man, he's actually pretty doggone good. So then I get back to the room and I'm looking at Mars Hill, FCS Bowl, D lineman. And it was like, oh, no, it's this kid, Andreas. I was like, oh, so he's an offensive line. He just ran out of numbers, right? And so now I'm just like, the next day you get out there and it's same thing. Not only just in one-on-ones, but now you're seeing him open up holes in 907. You're seeing him doing a great job in team. And, yeah, he played tackle, right tackle at Mars Hill, but he's a guard because he came in measured in at 6'2", 315. Everyone after practice, you know, when I'm saying scouts, seeing scouts constantly, they'll grab guys for interviews and, you know, get background information. He was busy. Like, he was usually one of the last ones to leave, but was one of the first ones to always get someone to come talk to him. Mm-hmm. And he was just so doggone dominant. So that was my live viewing. So when I'm grading guys, you know, for the draft guide on film, I'm like, oh, snap. Like, this dude literally was dominant in college, you know? So that explains why he won the trophy, but also explains why I saw what I saw at the FCS Bowl, even in a number 98, which still was I was fixing
it's on. It's just first. Ugly for an offensive lineman.
What are we doing here? Like, so, but he was awesome.
Numbers conundrum in college football. It's just pure chaos. So, but I get it when your eyes are looking at something and it's just not matching up. The cool thing is when you see a performance like that in an all-star game and then you go back to the tape, it leads you back to the tape and you see it there as well, because that's what you want to see with small school guys, is them just whipping the competition. Because if they're not whipping small school guys, the jump's going to be even tougher for them. But when you see that dominant performance, you get back and it matches up. That's cool.
Well, that's what I want to make sure people understand. Because you know, I don't cover the draft all year round, mm-hmm. you know, because during the season, I'm calling games. During the fall season, I am calling games. I am in college games, and I'm, you know, I do a pregame and postgame NFL show on CBS Sports HQ, right? So I'm covering NFL and college during the season. And then when I jump into the draft, it's December at the All-Star game mm-hmm. at the FCS Bowl. And then, so I've seen these guys live before I have actually studied their film. So to your point, yeah, because that's how some people can get fooled if it's the reverse, right? Because we know all-star games can be deceiving. You know, you see a guy out there just balling in one-on-ones, not realizing it's one-on-ones, and it's heavily slanted toward whatever side of the ball, depending on which one-on-one you're talking about, right? And so, if like you said, if I see you dominating on film, I mean, at an all-star game, you better be dominating on film. Otherwise, I know you're just a practice player. So it's unique. I'm glad my process is that way because I come in with fresh eyes. And mm-hmm. so I'm just seeing everybody's athleticism and seeing everybody's, you know, ability. But that better job of what I see on film, because, you know, we know live can lie, you know.
Next guy up on the list, actually, both of you have seen live. I have not seen him live. It's Jamal Hill, linebacker out of Oregon, who, I mean, EJ up close and personal, watched him run a, what was it, 4.41 at his pro day at 225?
This was my introduction to him. I'd seen him on film, but only because I was watching Evan Williams or because I was watching Jackson or, you know, or Dorless, all the guys on that defense. But, you know, we get to the pro day, and yeah, Emery, you could speak to this. You've been to a lot of pro days. Like, you show up, and it's not always super organized. Like, there's not always a list of all the players. Oregon's really good. They actually hand you a list with pictures, which is the only place I've ever been where they give you a roster grid of the guys that are at the pro day, including the guys who are working out sometimes that aren't draft eligible. And that's super handy because sometimes they just need an extra line or they need an extra receiver to make out the rotation. You're like, hey, is that guy eligible? And it turns out he's not. Oregon's great. They give you the grid view, which was really good because here comes a guy, shirt off, built like Adonis, completely chiseled. I'm like, huh, who's that guy? Runs down. Again, they don't give you the time. There's not a big, a lot of people think there's just a big scoreboard and they announce it and the horns go off and the confetti comes out. No, the guy runs and that's it. And a lot of people, when they go to a pro day for the first time, are really surprised by that. But you go to enough of them, you know when a guy's fast. And this guy's built, has size, rips down the 40. And I was like, okay, who's that? Flip it open the roster. Okay, this is Jamal Hill. So talk about Jamal Hill, the linebacker from Oregon.
Well, he kind of cheated because he was a safety in his career. He just moved a linebacker this season.
That's not cheating. People in the league do it.
But, you know, it's like, so... You know, it's kind of explains, you know, the body type and the speed, right? Because we know linebackers tend to have a little bit more meat on their bones, right? But for him, watching him this year as a neophyte in terms of playing a position and projecting him forward is this one is more of a projection because you see a guy that's trying to figure it out there on the field. But when he does see it or able to diagnose, he's able to get downhill, trigger, and just explode into the ball carrier. Like I tell people, go watch his Stanford game, and then you'll get a good idea of, you know, the potential he has because he's constantly communicating, trying to get guys lined up, trying to see what's going on. But, man, getting from point A to point B, he's explosive in that regard. He is able to uncoil into a ball carrier. And now you're thinking, like, okay, one core special teamer. You know, right off the bat. Two, sub package guy. And three, you know, he can easily develop into a top-notch blitzer because of his speed and explosiveness and first step. So you see all those things when you're watching him play and you're like, wow, he just started playing a position? Like, that's crazy. Like, so now you're thinking in terms of maybe an EJ Speed or Quinnen Williams' brother, you know,
oh, Quincy, yeah. Hits like a Mack truck.
Exactly, and explosive, and, you know, ran the same 40 time. Like, so there's a prototype, a model for him, and you've seen it recently. It's not like we have to go back and say, oh, Derrick Brooks, right? Like, there's recent examples of guys at his size running his speed and being able to have an impact on a defense, a significant impact and role on a defense. So I was impressed by his athleticism, was impressed by his rawness and, you know, unique abilities for a guy that just plopped into a very good, very capable defense this year. I won't say good, but very capable defense, Oregon. And, you know, he was rotating in, but, man, his reps made him count. So I like that. I like the projection of him moving forward and being a significant player.
And like you said, the blueprint's out there. I mean, guys like Nicholas Morrow, we've seen this more than once, and recently it's not as if we're saying, oh, we're going to take this, you know, player X and turn him into player. Like, a bunch of guys have made this transition because of the way the league is moving on defense. Got to have the ability to move. You got to have the explosiveness. Size, just pure size, isn't necessarily the calling card of linebackers anymore. And when you see those few traits, those few sparks, especially with somebody that's young in the position, yeah, that's tantalizing. You go, I got a role for him right now. I know what I'm going to do with him in camp. He's going to start on special teams, but I got some plans for this guy.
I dare you to run your wheel routes now thinking that, oh, that's a linebacker. We got a good matchup. Like, nah, he's a safety. He can cover. You know what I'm saying?
When you mentioned a core special teamer, This is something I've asked a bunch of our guests because I want to get everybody's perspective on this. We had a kickoff rule change halfway into draft season this year, right? And so I think some priorities have shifted in terms of what we're looking for. And when you mentioned that Jamal Hill could be a core special teamer, I immediately think, okay, kickoff coverage team, it's not that it never mattered, but it matters perhaps more than ever now because we're going to get potentially more returns than ever, and there's also going to be different body types doing those returns. I think we're shifting away from like that Trendon Holiday, okay, here's a 150-pounder that runs 4.2, hope we can crack a lane open and he can just take off. Now I think we're going to see more, you know, big bodies, 220, 230, Cordarrelle Patterson types that are going to be, you know, being kickoff return men with like almost like running back skill sets. And so you need people that are built like this, that are fast but can also hit, played safety, played linebacker. That ability for him to potentially excel in this new kickoff environment, how much does that bump up him for you or bump up any of these prospects, whether it's being a returner or potentially being an elite cover man within the new framework of the kickoff? How much does that affect your grades for some of these guys?
It does bump a lot of people up. And when you're grading, you're grading for, because we don't work for a specific team, right? So when you're grading essentially for the whole league. So you're viewing this prospect with 32 different eyes, right? 32 sets of eyes. So watching him, you think, okay, core special teamer, right off the bat, that's universal. Anybody can see that. Which is why you've seen the Giants run out and sign Dante Miller of South Carolina / Columbia, who was also at the College Gridiron Showcase and was just like at a different speed than everybody else, despite being, 190. He came in at 190, but he still looked lean. But they drafted him. I know for a fact it was more than likely special teams, return specialists, because he was a running back, but he's a great returner. So he's used to returning, and he also has a running back skill. And to your point, you need guys down there that can run, but also are very good tacklers and are used to tackling. So that's where a guy like that comes in. If you see a small school corner or a small school safety, you like the height, weight, speed, you like the athleticism, man, and you say, okay, now we have a gunner, either on punt coverage or we have an outside guy, L8 or whatever, on kickoff, and get down and keep his lane integrity, but also as good open field tackler. So you're going to see these things change, and where guys were kind of on the cusp, instead of eliminating special teams and kind of use what you got on the roster, now you kind of can create a role for someone to where he can be on the practice squad, but find himself getting called up, maybe for game day, but then sent back down or something like that, because of how unique it's going to be. And yes, you don't want these big bodies now. Maybe you don't see the big D linemen unless they are, these guys that are like 6'3", like 240, 6'4", 240, the lean guys that can run. But everyone on core special teams now better be able to run because everything is in play now, especially on kickoff. You see what happens sometimes when you have a block kick on field goal or extra point and you like, damn, we got 7 offensive linemen out there. Like, we done. It's going back the other way.
Yep.
Kickoff and punt coverage is going to be a little bit unique this year. I'm excited to see because it increases the jobs for a lot of these guys that are right there on that borderline.
EJ, were there any guys that you've done that popped out to you in a similar kind of vein where it's like, okay, I don't know if he's going to get on the field playing his position, but he'll definitely get on the field on fourth down or on kickoff?
Yeah, I think it comes to the running back class. This running back class has been, I'd say, much maligned, and I don't really think that's necessarily fair. There's not a lot of top-end talent, I'll give you that, but there is a lot of talent and a lot of different types of runners, and like Emery said, there's going to be more jobs for those guys because I really do think the creative special teams coaches are going to handle kickoff returns much more like an offensive run play now. It's not, I mean, because of the distance is shortened and you are looking for the ability to swing a couple blockers and pop one hole open. So you're looking at those running backs who are really, you know, typically we've talked about them as one cut and go guys. If they have good contact balance and they're one cut and go guys, there's a role for them now, because special teams coaches are going to be trying to basically pop open the same gaps that they would in a run play in special teams. That being said, I'm going to throw a name at you, Emery, and this one's, we did not prepare you for this, so we'll see how you field it, but I bet you got it. John Huggins. He's at the HBCU Bowl. He's a safety. What do you think of him?
He had the best workout at the HBCU Combine. Like, he ran 4.4. He jumped ridiculous out the, you know, vertical. His broad jump, I think, was like close to 11.
Yep.
You know, so
this is why I love Emery. You can just throw any random name at him. Yep. He's just rattling it off. Let's go.
He was outstanding, man. And he was someone that at Jackson State played down the box a little bit. Uh-huh. But you see him a little bit more as a safety, a strong safety in a classical sense. But that nickel backer, you think like Landon Collins type, you know, that role. Once he finally agreed to play, you know, linebacker. I know that was a big contention with him, you know, for his whole career. But, you know, guys like that, we again, nothing is ever new in football. We've seen this before. Deion Buchanan was, I think, one of the first ones to kind of start this trend. But he just couldn't stay healthy. But Huggins is someone that's really good. You just hope that the off-the-field stuff is behind him.
Yeah,
because that's going to be the biggest question. The on-field stuff is where he dominates and can play. And he had one of the best weeks out there at the HBCU Legacy Bowl, in conjunction with one of the best combine workouts there as well. So I love his game. He was excellent, good ball skills, good tackler, good hitter, and definitely checks all the boxes athletically, because he had a bunch of guys buzzing that Monday at the HBCU Combine.
Yeah, and I can see – again, probably going to be UDFA for the reasons you mentioned, but he's on everybody's radar because of those workouts, because of how he measured, because of how he ran, because of how he hits. And again, this rule change gives him an even greater opportunity, because you want to talk about guys that can run, that guy can run.
I got one more DB here, and pardon my ignorance. I had not heard of this school before today. Minot State. Emery, how did you find a DB out of Minot State? Please enlighten me.
It's the Beavers, man. Like, they got a cool logo. but Nyland Miller-Levy is this is the benefit of going to these smaller All-Star games, right? Because he was at the FCS Bowl. And, you know, you're watching him play. You're like, man, he's got really good length and athleticism. Like, he came in at 5'11 and some change, close to 6 feet. But he looks like he's 6'1". You know, he has great length. You know, his arm length is impressive. Very good ball skills. And so now I'm watching him, you know, Minot State Division II program. So you're watching him at the FCS Bowl against, you know, some FCS talent. And you're watching, okay, this is a pretty good matchup. And although he played in a high-level D2 conference in the Northern Sun Intercollegiate, you know, conference, and he's competing really well. And then he gets a call up to the Tropical Bowl, and you're like, okay, now we're going to see him against FBS receivers. He's doing a solid job there. Press skills is where they need to be. And his ability to play the ball, contest the ball once it gets to the, you know, to the receiver, with those long arms and not really get too handsy. But then you go and watch his film. You also then realize he was an outstanding return specialist. Like, oh, this is money in the bank for him now, because he can return kickoffs. So you know about the speed and, you know, the acceleration is necessary. People need to understand returning kicks and returning punts are two different skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
They're two different things. You got to be quick and shifty for punt return. You don't have to be blazing fast. It helps. But for kickoff, you better be fast and you better have great acceleration, because it takes one lane and you got to go. You can't stop and patter your feet. You know, I hate when I see that when guys returning kicks, kickoffs, because you're dead in the water. Just take a knee. So with him, you realize he was a really good returner, great ball skills, could play the boundary, cover two corner type guy, can turn the ball over. But his kickoff return ability, I thought, elevated him a little bit more. And I didn't know that at the All-Star game, at both All-Star games, but you find it out on film, but on tape, all right, you saw him cover, you saw him play zone rather well, good instincts, and this is someone that you want to bring along as an undrafted guy, or maybe a late day three guy, probably undrafted priority guy, but you bring him along slowly. It's sort of like how, even though he was drafted and had a higher, you know, rating than this guy had, but Corey Ballantyne was a D2 guy, excellent kickoff return specialist coming out of Washburn, and then, you know, got drafted by the Giants. But I feel like, you know, Nylon Miller-Levy will be someone that may not get drafted, but because he has the kickoff return ability, has good press skills and cover skills, has good ball skills, this is someone you kind of want to keep around because he can be your specialist, not only on coverage units, but also in the return game.
When you're comparing him to other, like, late DBs, right, that either will be like a seventh round, maybe priority UDFA, where does he stack up against, like, the Quantez Stiggers, you know, prospects, like that kind of tier? Is he in that tier, or is he somebody who you're pretty confident won't be drafted but will be getting calls during day three of teams trying to recruit him, and hey, here's the signing bonus, like where do you have him?
Yeah, he's at that lower tier to where he's going to be a priority free agent. Stiggers to me is someone that's probably going to get drafted higher than people think, because, you know, watching and covering the CFL all year and seeing his jump from, you know, not playing college ball, but kind of, you know, staying active in the fan control league and then becoming CFL rookie of the year, you know, and here's the thing. Covering in the CFL is like, I always use the analogy where if I dropped you off in the middle of a Walmart parking lot and say, okay, you got from the door to the end of the parking lot. Like, that's what it's like. Like, you're in the middle legitimately of nowhere, and you got to get your hook to curl is like forever, right? You better be athletic because you are covering so much space. So now you condense that. And we all saw that at the Shrine Bowl because we all were there. You know, how easy it was for him to play. Like, man, I'm playing in a control space. Like, oh, this is easy for me because I know where my sideline is. I know how far I have to go. I'm used to working with a lot of space, so I have to be quick on my toes and instinctive. Now I get to, you know, play in a condensed spot. It's no different than when Kurt Warner was playing in the Arena League. You're playing this out of a classroom, and now you go to the NFL, you're playing a little bit more space. But while you were playing in that classroom, you knew your anticipation had to be where it needed to be. The ball had to be accurate. You had to get that ball out quickly. Otherwise, you're going to get hit. But now you got more space, more room, more lime in the block. Of course you're going to hit the ground running and throw the ball all over the yard at the NFL level. So same thing with the CFL playing defense. If you're able to hold it down and play corner in the CFL, I have no doubt in my mind you can play corner at the NFL level. And so we saw that him being a pro already, a high-level pro rookie of the year, and then going and showing that he still has the athleticism to compete against top-tier, Power 5, FBS receivers. Man, that dude might even go round two. You know, because go like, man, we got a known commodity already.
Yeah, and he's built, too. We just spent a bunch of time this episode talking about the new kickoff rules. He's built and he can tackle, right? This is not a wispy little defensive back. He is a solid dude, and he'll hit.
Yeah, I think he's like 200 pounds.
And he can play inside because, again, everything is damn near in the slot in the CFL because you got so much space on either side of you.
Yeah, I would agree with you. The Stiggers is going to be a guy that gets drafted. He's going to be one of the first guys off the board, I think, that people go, who? Right? If they weren't paying attention to our All-Star coverage or they didn't watch the Shrine Bowl or whatever, or they don't watch the CFL, they're going to say, you know, where do you play college ball? Well, that's interesting. But no, he was a rookie coming from another league and, again, won the CFL Rookie of the Year, not even in a full season. Came in as a sub and won it in a shortened season. So made a huge impact in a very short period of time, but also has, when we talk to him at Shrine Bowl, has the versatility, not only physically, but mentally. Right. He's like, I'll do what you need me to do. Like, I'll play safety if you want me to. I'll play corner. I'll play nickel. I don't care. Like, I love playing football and I'll be inside. I'll hit. I'll be in the run fit. I'll be outside. Squeeze guys against that boundary. Like you said, he's just got versatility. And then you add that, you know, one more piece of the new rule change of, hey, here's a guy that can absolutely run. He can jump out of the gym. We've seen that over and over again. He's got good hands. So if there's going to be any kind of hands team element to the new special teams rules, he can be that too. So really valuable guy.
Before we let you go, I gotta ask you something, because you've watched literally 1,000 guys, right? So you have very good context for what the actual top is in each class, because you've seen so many guys, so you can compare so many guys. Is there anybody that's commonly talked about in, say, like the top 50 prospects, generally considered the top 50 prospects, that you personally are thinking, I'm going to pump the brakes on that one a little bit? Is there somebody that gets a lot of publicity that you think maybe there's better options down the board?
No, that's a good question. Because of the context, you know, I know I'm always a little bit different on quarterback. I feel like you get a quarterback tax. So, you know, Everybody will hype up a quarterback for the sake of quarterback when we really need to have like a reduction in a resetting of the quarterback market, where if you feel like a guy's a second round pick, take him in the second round. Like, don't take him in the top five. Cause now and I blame Kirk Cousins for that. You know, he started this. You know what I'm saying? Like, back in Washington, he started it. Like, if you just paid Kirk Cousins what you thought Kirk Cousins was and stopped franchising him, we wouldn't have seen the level of mediocrity rise at the position and forcing teams to, like, when in all seriousness, when you're a quarterback, I feel like an NFL quarterback should not be worse than Kirk Cousins or Derek Carr, because I feel like those guys should be what I feel like should be NFL average. They should be what you're at worst, what your quarterback should be at the pro level.
Baseline expectations,
you know, 8-9, 9-8. Just keep us within striking distance. You know what I'm saying? We'll build a quarterback proof team around you and we'll, you know, be fine. You know what I'm saying? We saw that work out for Brock Purdy. So I just feel like quarterback is the easiest one. I think people are starting to see the reason why people may have Malik Nabers or a Rome Odunze or any one of these other receivers over a Marvin Harrison Jr. It's not that Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't an elite player, right? But it's when you're looking at, when you're stacking and you're saying, okay, like, we all kind of get caught up in the way too early mock drafts. So the mock draft is going to come out, let's say, Monday after the NFL draft, a way too early look at 2025. There's going to have a name, you know, on there that everyone is going to then use it as the baseline. So if this dude was in the first round of this way too early mock, then by the time we got to keep him in the first round, because he was, you know, and then when you get to draft season, some people that are constantly married to that original mock will constantly talk him up. Because think about how we kind of all was just kind of, oh, Marvin Harrison easily. But no one really was breaking down the film and during the season was thinking like, man, maybe Nabers is better, or maybe, you know, I kind of like Odunze better. It was always Marvin Harrison Jr. until everyone kind of started to get, you know, into their evaluation mode and was like, man, it's a, you know, man, maybe I like A.D. Mitchell a little bit better. Maybe I like, you know, Keon Coleman, how he plays a little bit better. I like Marvin Harrison, but maybe, you know, it's just, you know, maybe this fast, explosive dude is probably going to have more success.
How do you have it stacked, though? Now I got to ask, how do you have it
stacked? Well, I have it because, you know, I grade receivers by position. So it's like split in. So X, Z, slot, big inside receiver. So my number one slot, I mean, my number one X is Rome Odunze. My number one Z is Malik Nabers. My number one slot is Ladd McConkey. My number one inside is Tajon Palmer. Right. And so when you look at my number two and three flankers, Z receivers, it is, then you look at Keon Coleman is two and then Marvin Harrison is third. You know, so I like Keon Coleman more than Marvin Harrison. Here's what I think about people sleep on about Keon Coleman. They talk about his speed, but go look at the combine and go look at him running the gauntlet and fastest GPS. What that tells you is that he has confident hands. Like, I can fly through this drill because I know I'm gonna catch everything thrown my way. And he ran a straight line. He wasn't doing this like these receivers try to cheat the drill, try to get close to the ball to catch it and, you know, swing back momentum back the other way. Like, nah, he ran straight down, fastest dude in the gauntlet, confident hands, and he returned punts. tells you a lot about his footwork, his quickness, his releases off the line, which he has. And he's also underrated after the catch. Why? Because he has good quickness, good footwork. He can make you miss. Who know else was tall and return punts like that? Keenan Allen. He didn't have the blazing 40-yard time, but you don't put someone 6'3". How often do you see someone 6'3 and above out there returning punts? You don't. Randy Moss did it at 6'5", right? So we know he was special. I just feel like Keon Coleman, people are focused on the 40 and this, you know, this, these new metrics that people create about separation, yardage, and yards, whatever they call it, right? You know, yards above expected separation metric, something like they just create. Every day is something new. But when you watch football, you watch this dude dominate. So that's someone that I said, hey, he's a little bit better than Marvin Harrison in his total game. And I do think, and people may be shocked about that, but what was shocking, if I was to see my grades, would be like, man, why you have him as a Z and not an X? Because I feel like when you're an X, you got to be consistently good at getting off bump press. Like, consistently good. I think that's an area where he can grow. Now, you can go from Z to an X easily. Mm-hmm. You can go from slot to an X easily. But that's where I had those guys stacked.
That is, first of all, very different than how I have it aligned, which is what makes this process fun, is we all see this very differently. Because I respect your opinion so much, I want you to sell me on Marvin not being an X. Is there a game I should watch tonight that kind of exemplify, or even just a DB, you know, like for me, like when I was watching Malik Nabers going against the Florida State kids, I was like, oh, I don't know if I could put him outside. But did you have a similar kind of thing with Marvin where it's like, Brett, sit down, watch this game. It'll explain exactly what I'm talking about of why I think he's a Z instead of an X.
Well, it's a lot of, you know, the good thing about the Big Ten, a receiver, you're going to get a lot of good corners. You know, you go watch the Maryland game, you can go watch the Penn State game, you can go watch the games against Rutgers. You know, so you just go watch games and just kind of say like, okay, how can we, let's watch him versus press consistently, right? And let's watch him versus press in a one-on-one situation. Not in a situation where he's schemed open, where he's running versus space, catch on a move, and then just running down the sideline, right? I remember someone heard my take and sent me a clip. Was like, you know, I'm not worried about his speed. And they sent me a clip of him, you know, breaking his long reception against Youngstown State. I'm like, God, like, listen, man.
I love Youngstown, but.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Youngstown's not even, you know, they're not even the best in the Missouri Valley. Like, yo, pick North Dakota State, somebody, right? But but I'm like, you know, it's because you hear it and you like, when people are constantly talking about the player as the elite end all be all, no question. Now I got to watch consistently and just like, all right, let me see the it. And you see a bunch of good and you see a bunch of, you know, borderline great, even with the, you know, the way he's able to catch damn near everything thrown his way. Right. But as much as people talk about, you know, these new separation metrics, they never bring up him. You know what I'm saying? So, unless this might be adjusted for him to where he, you know, his separation is different than separation of a Keon Coleman. But I would say, like, pick any one of those games and just watch him consistently over time versus, you know, press versus very physical DBs. Maryland had a good secondary. You know, a bunch of those guys were out there physical. And just, you know, just take in, like, just what I'm saying in terms of, like, him versus press consistently. And again, a lot of it, there was one play I remember against Penn State where, you know, he was wide open. And I could see why you could be frustrated with the whole situation with Kyle McCord and the passing game. Like, he was literally open on a crossing route, a low crosser, and McCord threw it to the slot, you know, which was defended well by 25, right? Marvin Harrison Jr. is flying across the low crosser with no one around him. And it's like, all right, yeah, I'm taking the rest of the day off, man. Like dump this. Like, you remember the meme where the guy throws a paper, yeah, like, F this, yep, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's
like,
it. I'm out.
I'm out. I'm tapped out. First quarter, I'm out, bro. Like, this about to get stupid. But I would just say, like, him consistently over time, you know, versus press, even in the Michigan game, just like, okay, yeah, he could win one rep. But I need you to do it all the time. I need to see people. If you are the big dog, people shouldn't be lining up to where they want to press you. Like, why are you seeing so much press coverage? You know what I'm saying? Like, things like that you kind of notice. And, you know he could play. You know he could win. You know he could work himself open in a broken field situation, which is why he still has an 80-plus grade for me, right, which is like Pro Bowl. But watching the whole class, it was like, man, I kind of like a lot of these guys better.
Yeah, people have talked about his ability to win. It's funny you brought up the Rutgers game, but going back to highlights where people bring up Youngstown State, I was laughing at that because if you're looking at somebody's like highlights tape and 2/3 of its plays they made against North Alabama, like,
are even okay. even if okay, you're watching, cool. Like, first of all, you got to watch the tape, right?
Yeah, 100%.
I always find it funny when people like you know, show highlights. And the highlight tape would be like, you know, 3 minutes long. And then a minute and a half is slow motion intro and flat. Like, get to the highlight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, and then another minute. That's how you can tell. Like, we should do a whole podcast about highlight tape diagnosis. Okay. A, if your highlight tape is you played for 4 years, 5 years, and your highlight tape of your career is 250 and 30 seconds is musical intro and another minute worth is what you did against North Alabama. Like,
bro, if I see another dude coming out the tunnel, like, again, Kirk Cut, we need quarterback reform, you know, and we need highlight tape reform.
We need highlight tape reform.
We got like, they got stuff, and this is election year too. So I need to start, man.
Let me throw my hat in the
In the ring, like,
that's right. I want that t-shirt so bad.
That would be amazing. Emery, can't thank you enough for all the work you do. Tell everybody where they can find your stuff, because it's not just one place. Like you mentioned, you are in multiple places all over the year, all over the calendar, all over football. Where are those spots?
Firstly, go get the draft guide, guys. footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. 901 individual prospect scout reports this year. A lot of guys went back to school, so that took out the 1,000, right? But previous years we had over 1,000. This year we got 901 individual scout reports, so we're over 900. I could say that.
Yeah, like, just 900.
Beat you on technicality, right? So, but I really am excited about the last three pages of the draft guide. Like, people don't understand how significant that is. So be sure to pay attention to the last three pages of the draft guide this year, because it gives you an idea of where we're going next. And also, if you are wanting to see other scouting reports, you can go on the site too. You'll see the other years. But footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. You could also see me on CBS Sports HQ during the draft. I'll be there in studio for our draft coverage. And we'll be having a lot of fun, man. So it's football game plan, F-ball game plan on Twitter, YouTube. Hit subscribe. You know, that's where you see like a lot of maybe some practice highlights from these smaller all-star games. I tend to do a good job of gathering some clips or whatnot. And for all those guys that watch, like, listen, man, everything that I put out there on YouTube is all I got. I'm not storing like highlights, you know, for my own. Like, if I filmed it, it's out there. So, I mean, I have gotten all 45 reps of your one-on-ones. I may have only gotten 9 because that's how it is. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's all I got. You know what I'm saying?
Emery Hunt, one of the best out here doing it. Please get some sleep before the draft. I know we're all going to need it. It's been a grind. We all got through it. Another year of doing this. But enjoy draft weekend. We'll catch up with you at some point during the off season once we've recovered. And I look forward to seeing what you do when you're getting ready for 2025.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on.